The invasion's most memorable image was the fall of the statue of Saddam Hussein in a square in downtown Baghdad on April 9. The few days that followed were as good as it got, the high watermark of the invasion, observed Rick Atkinson, the military historian who embedded with the 101st Airborne Division during the 2003 invasion. This moment also brought one of the highest points in George W. Bush's popularity as president. The first big jump in his poll numbers came after 9/11, when his approval level shot from 55% to a stratospheric 92%. That slowly settled back down into the high 50s, but spiked back up to 77% with the fall of Baghdad. Yet even as the enemy capital fell, there was a quiet chorus of concern, especially from seasoned Army officers. "The hard part is yet to come," retired Colonel Johnny Brooks, an old infantryman, warned on the day Baghdad fell. "We can easily win the fight, but lose the peace." The United States needed to move quickly to restore electricity and other basic services. "If we do not give the people positive signals, and soon, that Iraq is getting better rapidly and that they have hope, then the gunmen will start appearing and taking shots at U.S. military. Then the suicide bombers will appear." Intelligence officials also were sending up rockets of warning. "It is premature to be doing victory laps," a senior military intelligence expert on the Middle East said at the time. "The hard part is going to be occupation. The Israelis won in 6 days, but have been fighting ever since, for 30 years. As U.S. forces triumphed, Iraqis rose up and expressed their hatred for Saddam Hussein's regime in an extraordinary wave of vandalism. Mobs attacked government buildings across the country, carting off not just valuables but everything that could be pried off walls and floors. During this period, it wasn't uncommon to see a pickup truck carrying doors, window frames, and piping from government offices. "Stuff happens," Defense Secretary Rumsfeld exclaimed at a Pentagon briefing on April 11, 2003, when asked about the looting. "But in terms of what's going on in that country, it is a fundamental misunderstanding to see those images over and over and over again of some boy walking out with a vase and say, 'Oh my goodness, you didn't have a plan.' That's nonsense. They know what they're doing, and they're doing a terrific job. And it's untidy, and freedom's untidy, and free people are free to make mistakes and commit crimes and do bad things. They're also free to live their lives and do wonderful things, and that's what's going to happen here." But that's not the way the looting felt to many of those on the ground in Iraq. During this period, the U.S. military was perceptibly losing its recent gains. It gave the sense that it really didn't know what to do next and was waiting to pass the mission to someone else. A finite supply of goodwill toward the Americans evaporated with the passing of each anarchic day, Lieutenant Nathaniel Fick, an elite force recon Marine officer, wrote of being in Baghdad during this time. "There wasn't any plan," recalled a special operations officer who was in Baghdad at the time. "Everyone was just kind of waiting around. Everybody thought they'd be going home soon." Looking back on that period, he recalled it as the slow loss of momentum. It wasn't like all hell broke loose. It was more like the situation eroded. The message sent to Iraqis was far more troubling than Americans understood. It was that the U.S. government didn't care. Or even more troubling for the future security of Iraq, that it did care, but was incapable of acting effectively. In either event, the U.S. government response to the looting undercut the beginning of the U.S. occupation.